There was a long silence between them. Then Mattie said in a low voice, "Don't be too sorry, Ethan. Oh, God. Oh, God," he groaned. The glow of passion he had felt for her had melted to an aching tenderness. He saw her quick lids beating back the tears and longed to take her in his arms and soothe her. "You're letting your supper get cold," she admonished him with a pale gleam of gaiety. "Oh, Matt. Matt, where'll you go to?" Her lids sank, and a tremor crossed her face. He saw that for the first time the thought of the future came to her distinctly. "I might get something to do over at Stamford," she faltered, as if knowing that he knew she had no hope. He dropped back into his seat and hid his face in his hands. Despair seized him at the thought of her setting out alone to renew the weary quest for work. In the only place where she was known, she was surrounded by indifference or animosity. And what chance had she, inexperienced and untrained, among the million bread-seekers of the cities? There came back to him miserable tales he had heard at Worcester, and the faces of girls whose lives had begun as hopefully as Mattie's. It wasn't possible to think of such things without a revolt of his whole being. He sprang up suddenly. "You can't go, Matt. I won't let you. She's always had her way, but I mean to have mine now." Mattie lifted her hand with a quick gesture, and he heard his wife's step behind him. Zena came into the room with her dragging down at the heel step and quietly took her accustomed seat between them. "I felt a little mite better, and Dr. Buck says I ought to eat all I can to keep my strength up, even if I ain't got any appetite," she said in her flat whine, reaching across Mattie for the teapot. Her good dress had been replaced by the black calico and brown knitted shawl which formed her daily wear, and with them she had put on her usual face and manner. She poured out her tea, added a great deal of milk to it, helped herself largely to pie and pickles, and made the familiar gesture of adjusting her false teeth before she began to eat. The cat rubbed itself ingratiatingly against her, and she said,
"Good pussy,"
stooped to stroke it, and gave it a scrap of meat from her plate. Ethan sat speechless, not pretending to eat, but Mattie nibbled valiantly at her food and asked Zena one or two questions about her visit to Bettsbridge. Zena answered in her everyday tone and, warming to the theme, regaled them with several vivid descriptions of intestinal disturbances among her friends and relatives. She looked straight at Mattie as she spoke, a faint smile deepening the vertical lines between her nose and chin. When supper was over, she rose from her seat and pressed her hand to the flat surface over the region of her heart.
"That pie of yours always sets a mite heavy, Matt," she said, not ill-naturedly.
She seldom abbreviated the girl's name, and when she did so, it was always a sign of affability.
"I've a good mind to go and hunt up those stomach powders I got last year over in Springfield," she continued. "I ain't tried them for quite a while, and maybe they'll help the heartburn."
Mattie lifted her eyes.
"Can't I get them for you, Zena?" she ventured. "No, they're in a place you don't know about,"
Zena answered darkly with one of her secret looks.